every important event in the lives of righteous people begins by calling on the aid and the assistance and the guidance of the Almighty. So we begin in the name of God. In the Arabic language, we call him Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness that there is but one God. And I bear witness that Moses, I bear witness that Jesus, I bear witness that Muhammad are his servants to you and I. I greet you with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language. As-salamu alaykum. How's everyone this afternoon? Sisters and brothers, we welcome you back to our town hall. I want to just give a little historical context to the town hall themselves so that we understand their critical nature and their progressive motion. Some years ago, I took a group of our high school students, may have been Brother Salim and some others, as students at the Muhammad University when then Mayor Jerry Brown invited into the city participation of the U.S. military in what was known as Operation Urban Shield. That operation was an experiment in door-to-door military force in an apartment housing unit, former military base in the Oakland Hills. We fast forward that a few years down the line, and we became well acquainted with our host pastor here at the Olivet Missionary Baptist Church, our Reverend Humphreys, who's in the building. There he is. Give him a big round of applause. We became exceedingly well acquainted with our pastor because in West Oakland, just a few months ago, there was an operation there known as Operation Nutcracker, in which law enforcement came down on the Acorn housing community, arrested 54 young, mostly men, accused them in the media of all sorts of notorious crimes. In fact, I believe it was Councilperson Brooks who made the statement that the day before Operation Nutcracker, Oakland was never known for gangs. But the day after Operation Nutcracker, all of a sudden, Oakland had a notorious gang. So notorious that the Attorney General and former mayor called those that were arrested domestic terrorists. And had you seen the weaponry that was rolled out into the Acorn on that raid, there were, I believe, 400 officers to arrest 54 people. And their weaponry included domestic tanks. It took my mind back to Operation Urban Shield. Yesterday at the arena, in the parking lot, were some of those tanks. And Brother Lyle, I had never seen one. So when we parked the car, I laid my eyes on a rolling tank from the city of Modesto. It appears that every major city has law enforcement arming itself to such a degree is really unimaginable. One of the questions that has arisen in the murder of our brother, let me stop and say, let's all give a big round of applause and show our love for Sister Wanda Johnson, the mother of Brother Oscar. Operation Nutcracker. We took concerned citizens. We walked along with Pastor Humphreys from here to every door between here and the Acorn. We talked to every resident along with Councilperson Brooks to hear their concerns about what this operation was and what it meant to the community, and to share our concerns with what we saw. At that time, we were very concerned that since these young men were being called by the Attorney General of the state of California, the state's top cop, he called them urban terrorists in a press conference held by OPD in this multi-force, multi-agency operation. And then in his description of the beef that existed, because in our community there are some beefs that we need to settle, but he described the conflict between that part of West Oakland and this part of West Oakland. He described it in the terminology that he shared. He called it asymmetrical warfare. Now, you may not know what that means, of course, unless you're studying the war on terrorism in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Right.
Well, that raid and our initial response produced a meeting with Attorney General Brown, Councilperson Brooks, Reverend Humphreys, Brother Christopher, myself, and I don't remember was there anyone else there with us. And in that meeting, the Attorney General told us, in essence, that language really allowed for other funding to be used for the law enforcement stream, in addition to the funding would be Homeland Security. In addition to the fact that as a lifelong Democrat, so far as I know, I think he took a few years away when he was an independent and doing radio shows for KPFA. But as a majority-life Democrat, apparently liberal politician, he took a position that what he did was, in essence, had been called for by a political force that exists in the state of California. A great part of that force involves police departments all over the country and their unions, coupled with the prison industrial unions,
yes,
which are considered the strongest unions in the state. So he left us with a challenge and an opportunity that if we could produce a force greater than the force that was backing the political idea that all these young urban males are criminals, build new prisons, fill the prisons. Supervisor Carson was lamenting the other day over the county budget. He said that when the budget comes down, the first block of money goes immediately to systems for incarceration. He said the next block of money goes to the district attorney's office. And since there was outcry over the shooting, which we're going to address today, of those four officers and its relationship with parole and probation, he said the last part of the budget offer those services that are designed to help inmates that have returned home to peacefully and productively return to life in society.
The last part.
And that's our brother Wilson Rounds, one of the elected officials with great experience, former elected officials, who knows this budgetary problem. So when it comes time to build up human beings, cultivate and develop human beings, there's an obvious problem of political will. So we've had these town halls here, which began then. But of course, the shooting of our dear brother and son, Brother Oscar, has given the town hall in Oakland that specific mission to take on, and we thank you for taking it on in a magnificent way. Give yourself.
Because
no one else took it on. That's absolutely right. And one of the things that is unfolding right before our very eyes, as I went to the courtroom on Monday, when Johannes Mezali was to come for his preliminary hearing in the charges against him. If I understand properly, he would have been presented with a decision of the magnitude of the charge, meaning would the charge be second degree murder? Would the charge be manslaughter?
And hopefully we'd never have the option that the charge would be anything less than murder. However, the judge rendered a decision and informed the family, did not ask the family, informed the family of Oscar Grant as well as Mr. Messerly that that hearing would be delayed out of fear that law enforcement in Oakland would not have the resources to manage a protest on the heels of the shooting incident of last Saturday. But when I arrived at the court, we were told by persons who work around that courthouse that there were plenty of law enforcement there to deal with any kind of incident. Not only were they there, but they were more heavily armed than usual. And I didn't have a chance to speak with Sister Wanda and the family before I left. And the reason that I left was I knew there was a critical matter I had to deal with concerning the shooting incident. And when I came in, I asked the guard at the door, if I come in, am I able to come out? I understood there were limited seats. They actually crunched this critical trial into a 34-seat facility.
Yep.
The guard at the door said, sure, if you've got to go early, just, you know, handle your business. As soon as I sat down and the bailiff came into the courtroom, the bailiff gave a different order. The bailiff entered the courtroom and said, this is a closed session. Once these doors are closed, there'll be no going out and there'll be no one coming in. Well, I knew that I had been arrangements to deal with many that had been affected in the shooting in East Oakland, so I knew that I had to leave. When I left, some of us that are here at the town halls wanted to get in and have our seats, and at that point, the guards had locked anyone else from coming into that court procedure. So you might have read that the hearing has been postponed to May the 18th. Now let's be clear. Did it really take 2 months for them to respond to a new court date? And who chose these dates? What criterion was used to come up with a date? Because there's conflicts around this date. That's the date that our brother, Chauncey Bailey, who was unsensibly murdered, the date for the killer of Chauncey Bailey is May 18th. Those that know history know that May the 19th is Malcolm X's birthday. They're just issues. How did it come up with that particular date? They couldn't have done it next week. I'm sure Ms. Johnson would have agreed next week. If you don't think you can handle the security, maybe next week. Maybe after the funeral of these officers. But the reality is they pushed back and have delayed justice again. Now, as a community, we have such a long history with law enforcement that we have a concern whenever it looks like if we are done wrong by law enforcement that nobody does anything. We got more time in history in America of black people not being protected by law than protected by law. You just count the years. When they wrote the Constitution, were we protected?
No.
When they passed the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, they talked about protection, but did we get the free ability to vote with the 14th Amendment?
No.
Or the 15th Amendment, pardon me? It took another 100 years, didn't it?
Yeah.
If you don't know, it took from 1865 to 1965. It took 100 years for equal protection of the law to take a little bit of teeth. And it's still half toothless. And so my point here is that that history says to us that if we are treated with injustice, we must now demand that the courts move swiftly, because history says we won't get it at all. That's what history says. Now, those things being said, the shooting incident is so horrific that we're all human beings, and none of us should feel other than the pain of loss. Those four officers on that day did not know that they would lose their lives. Neither did Lavelle Mixon know that he would lose his life. Reports said that he was pulled over by a routine traffic stop. But our brother Oscar, that was a routine stop on a BART train for a conflict on a train. And that's only to suggest that black men understand clearly that there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop. That any behavior is concerning. I just learned from someone today, a former black police chief here in Oakland, whose sons were brutally beaten by police officers in Oakland. Well, I believe in Oakland, but that's it. In Emory, next door to Oakland. However, we should be clear that if we were to find anyone who would so quickly pull a weapon in that circumstance, that some kind of imbalance has actually set in. That's not normal thinking. But what produces this kind of thinking? What produces this kind of thinking are decades of misuse and abuse by authorities. Those having authority are responsible for those over whom they wield authority. When America went to war in the so-called war on terrorism, one of the questions that was often asked is, why do they, Arab world, feel this way about us? And it rarely would be answered. And George Bush would craft a well-dressed lie and say, it's because they hate our freedom. You mean the Palestinians have a problem with the Israeli people because they hate Israeli freedom? No. Black folk in America have a problem with the former slave masters because we hate their freedoms? No. Actually, we want some freedom for ourselves. Who would fight you because they hate your freedom? It doesn't add up, right? So now, this abuse of authority produces an imbalance of mind. When grievances go for decades unaddressed, if we can cry out for hundreds of years, and in the case of our brother Oscar, it took, what, 6 days for anyone in a position of leadership and authority to openly say anything about the wrong deed of the murder of our brother. It took 6 days. We gathered a meeting in this room, Pastor Humphreys, Councilperson Brooks, Jeffrey Peet, a few others, and we gathered to talk about what we saw on television and decided that we only needed one day, if that, to issue a response. In fact, somebody in the room said, call the DA. So we did. And one thought was, let's go see the district attorney right now. Do we really need to take 3 months, 4 months, 5 weeks, whatever the time it is that's required in order to demand justice over something we see with our own two eyes is wrong?
So many in our community are really quite a bit disappointed and angry. Because they saw, we saw, the same persons who took more than a week to respond to the murder of our brother, still haven't responded, some of them. And it took no more than a day for Governor Schwarzenegger to be in downtown Oakland. No more than a day. Now, this is not to say that the lives of those officers are not valuable. They are. The question becomes, however, in the eyes of those in authority, are the lives of black young men valuable? Are we valuable enough to take a stand? Yeah. Are we valuable enough to make our concerns known? Are we valuable enough to write law and legislation that doesn't criminalize us, it allows us to pursue happiness? And so, sisters and brothers, those things being said, we were among the first, and you should know this, to call Chief Jordan and offer our condolences, because the loss of OPD was not expected, and surely those families are enduring great pain. We called same day. We called Mandela's immediately to give him our sympathies, condolences, and to share our concerns. So our approach to injustice is to bring about justice, which is why we are gathered here today. And so I wanted to bring some of those that have been organizing to bring justice in our communities in the murder of our brother, but have been organizing in general across the board. So we're going to bring them up, and I want you to give them your undivided attention so that we can grow together and know together how best to proceed in a time in which tension is there. One thing we don't have to do in this truthful environment is ignore the fact that there's an elephant in the room. There's an elephant in the room in the city of Oakland. It's there. I went into the store and somebody said to me, didn't I see you in the Oscar Grant on the news that you may have? And he said, well, I want you to know. He told me straight, I don't feel nothing. That's what he said about those that lost their lives. Yep. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell him how he felt. I could tell him that all life is valuable. And the better thing for us to do is to learn how to value self and begin to do and stand up and better organize for ourselves. Therefore, you're better able to demand the respect of others. So we were able to talk, but he told me from the heart. And he wasn't alone. He didn't have to tell me anything. One of the things you learn in politics is when somebody writes a letter, the elected official weighs that letter as being representative of the thinking of a certain number of people. Yes. You don't have to go far. Walk right up San Pablo and ask. Walk right down 27 and ask. In fact, you might only need to ask the person sitting next to you how some may feel about this horrific incident. And so, sisters and brothers, we wanted to do what we could to share a balanced perspective that gives us guidance and instruction on how to move forward in this time of great tension in the city of Oakland and the Bay Area. So I want you to join me in receiving our sister, who is a doctor, and you know we're in need of healing.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, we got good doctors in the house, and I want you to join me in receiving our sister from the Allen Temple Baptist Church, the Reverend Dr. Ramona Tosca.